This is the week before WWDC. We have a lot of stuff to talk about. There's an avalanche of leaks and stuff leading up. So we are going to do some, you know, wish list stuff, but it seems a bit pointless to, you know, go through the whole thing when it feels like we have a pretty good picture of quite a lot of the stuff. So just repeating the rumours is going to be kind of redundant. I think we're going to do like a little preview of what we expect from the show, some like last minute, you know, wants and hopes about individual features, like the, you know, exact permutations of dark mode and stuff like that. But of course we have some, you know, headlines to get through first. When iOS 12.3 came out, there was the whole, we talked about the whole like smart AirPlay 2 automatically detecting your TVs in your home, telling you and like automatically streaming to it when you press play and it trying to learn. And we kind of said it, this could either be really good or it could be really annoying. I've just been using my Apple TV and my iPhone as normal since the update, and it hasn't really suggested anything automatically to me at the moment. I think that's because it relies on you using the TV app from the phone, and I don't really subscribe to any channels or anything, and I kind of use Plex more than iTunes, so I don't, you know, live my life in the TV app. You said, however, that you have encountered the smartness, and it could have been better.
Yeah, this was one of those funny things that happened in between our conversation and editing and releasing the show. And it was like a quick update. There's a quick turnaround time on like your question. What I've experienced is that oftentimes I'll play a podcast on my phone or something, or you know, music even, and I will hear in the living room that what the kids are watching on the Apple TV through the TV app gets replaced with my podcast audio or something. And it's the whole like HomePod model where you remotely control playback on that device from your phone. So it plays on the Apple TV, even though it is like the podcast source. And it's doing that kind of intelligently because it's like, oh, there's an Apple TV playing. Let's change the iPhone's now playing screen to the Apple TV tile. Even though there's audio playing on the iPhone, it's making a bad guess about that, a bad assumption about what it should do. So that's one thing I've seen personally.
So that's like if someone else was using the TV to, you know, just do something, and you're kind of in the vicinity just playing around on your phone, but then it, you know, thinks that you're also the TV watcher, so it kind of takes over.
Yeah, so you've got to, it kind of reminds me of the old days of like when Bluetooth was very aggressive about like if there was like any Bluetooth speaker turned on and you know, within range, like that became the source. It's like you've kind of got to double check like what is the audio source before I begin playing this, or like even like tap play from, or tap play like from pause. So it's a little bit weird. Hopefully that gets addressed. Like people see it and they're like, oh, that's too aggressive. So if both things are playing, don't do this. I had seen from other people though, where they see like a banner in an app, like a blue dialog box. It's like tap here to, it explains like, and that's from a non-TV app, like a non-audio app even. Have you seen that yourself?
Yeah. So I actually saw this alert during the beta period when it was kind of still kind of like really weird and buggy. But actually since the, you know, final release has come out, I haven't actually had it come up. But it's like a blue banner. It kind of looks like a notification, but it's like blue background, white text. And it will say like, this content, it will now automatically play on living room or lounge or whatever the name of your Apple TV is. And it just gives you a warning that it has actually kicked in the automatic streaming, so you don't, you know, get caught unawares streaming something to the TV that you didn't want to. And obviously you can like click on it and stop it or whatever. But
yeah, so the verdict is a little bit less out there right now. It could be better, I think. And
yeah. There was also something I saw where it was like the phone had connected to the AirPlay 2 of the TV, but because you'd gone into the music app was just like blank because it was looking at what the TV music app was playing, and obviously nothing was playing.
Yeah,
so it's like, you know, it probably should limit it just to video content, right? Like,
right,
it seems a bit overreach, and it's gonna cause more harm than good if they're just gonna, you know, cross content types like that constantly.
Yeah, because in the music situation it's like you didn't even like do anything really. It just got the wrong note, and that whole concept of like a cross apps, you've got a consistent now playing bar, you know, that is on another device is pretty complex. So like if you're a novice user, that could become very tricky to understand, I think.
Yeah, especially when it's switching, you know, on your behalf, like without you doing it. Like at least with the HomePod situation, you can switch and see what your HomePod's playing, but obviously, you know, it's the user that actually does the switch and presses a button, so they can keep it like a better mental model in their head of what's actually going on. When you're just playing around your phone and suddenly you go into music and it's some for some reason connected to the TV that's not playing, it's like, well, you know, you're just being dumb at that point. So hopefully they can work on that. Also, obviously last week there was the 2019 MacBook Pro announcement and release. People obviously got their hands on them. iFixit has teared them down, of course. And so the new material keyboard, we actually got like close-up pictures of. There are new materials, surprisingly. The dome switch, which is the actual thing that depresses down, almost like a bottle cap, like clicking it in, that's what sends a signal for a key press. That has been changed with new materials, and the membrane, like a plastic membrane that goes over the top of the dome cap, has actually changed more substantially. On the old one, there's pictures in the post that you can see. The old one was a like silicone kind of material, and it was translucent, but more like semi-translucent, kind of opaque, like white. And the new one is like clear, and iFixit did some analysis, and it's made of like nylon now or something, like a nylon polymer. And that's like more visually different, and obviously that's different on every single key. They couldn't really come to a conclusion, though, about whether they actually know this is going to address the problem in a meaningful way. It certainly seems like Apple has attacked the issue in two directions, and it seems a more targeted approach than what they've done in the past. You know, when, and to be fair, in the past years, they've never actually said, we are changing this, you know, to make it more reliable. That was just kind of been the subtext. This year, they, you know, they seem to have come out and talking to the press, at least, about it becoming more reliable, and it seems like the changes they've made are more structural, and, you know, the materials seem, you know, they're at least visually different, like, so, but whether that, the performance of those components is good enough to not have the repeated key problems, the stuck key problems, that's still something that we're kind of, you know, waiting and seeing, and we'll know 3 months down the line when people actually buy these new laptops and have them for a little while.
Yeah, one of my concerns here is that it does take time to evaluate if this change is effective or not. And even internally, like Apple, they haven't had that much time to evaluate this design since the last version of this generation of keyboards. So that means that, you know, if it's since last July where they released these keyboards, and then October with the MacBook Air, then they haven't had a full year even to say like, oh, we've used this keyboard under normal circumstances for one full year and we've had, you know, X amount of issues. So it's kind of like the fact that it's a fast turnaround from the point, like 1.0 version of this generation of keyboard is optimistic, but inconclusive, I think. Yeah. And, you know, it's at least, you know, that they're talking about it is probably a good thing. But the best thing in all of this is that every keyboard that Apple makes with this keyboard style can be replaced, even if, you know, you haven't even bought it yet. So that's a good sign.
Yeah, I mean, and of course you have the boy that cried wolf element to this, where, you know, they were endorsing the last three generations of keyboard as well, and obviously they still had problems. So
yeah,
we're taking a wait and see approach. You'll obviously have a 2018 MacBook Air that is applicable to get the revised keyboard. I know you said you were going to get it swapped. You haven't done that yet, right?
Yeah, I'm going to wait until after WWDC travel and everything. And that's one of the things is like, if it was a situation where it was so bad that it was like not operational, then it would be like, well, I have no choice and I've got to like find a backup keyboard for the trip. But that has not been the case for me through all of this. It's just been that it's not perfect. and it has issues that like a desktop keyboard has not had. So, you know, it'll be fine for the trip. And then after the trip's over, I'll be in no hurry. But, you know, if you get a physically different keyboard, then why not make the change for free?
Indeed, and fingers crossed they've managed it this time. Just in time for them to introduce a whole new keyboard in the next generation.
Yeah.
It's literally the last moment they have to like cling on to the butterfly dream. In iPhone rumor news, obviously the iPhone rumors continue, Makatakara has a report out saying that the iPhone 11 will support Bluetooth dual audio, and this enables the iPhone to connect to multiple sound system speakers, headphones, car speakers at the same time. So obviously, you know, all iPhones today, you can pair with loads of devices, but if you switch between your headphones and another pair of headphones, you can't have them both connected at once. They have to switch between the two. If you go from AirPods to PowerBeats, you have to go one to the other. You can't have them both outputting sound at the same time. And Bluetooth dual audio, which apparently will be supported by the next iPhones, enables this behavior. Technically, dual audio is a feature of Bluetooth 5, like the specification.
Mm-hmm.
And the iPhones have had Bluetooth 5 Bluetooth modems since the iPhone 10 and the iPhone 8. That was the first year, and they've had them ever since. But obviously, none of the phones have actually supported the dual audio stuff to date, so it obviously requires software support as well as hardware support. It's not clear if, like, the particular Bluetooth radios that are in the iPhones today are incapable of supporting the dual audio. Like, maybe there's a hardware reason why they're not there. Like, they've left it out for battery performance or, you know, internal space or whatever. But, you know, very clearly, it doesn't do it today. And Makateka says the iPhone 11 will do it. Maybe at the same time, maybe it'll turn out to be an iOS 13 feature and they also backport it to the current iPhones. Who knows? But obviously, some Android manufacturers have supported this for a while, like it's a big Samsung feature. And it's kind of cool that you could go back to more of the like analog kind of thing where you can share headphones. Like, imagine if you just walked up to you with your AirPods and you could, like, one tap listen to what I was listening to. If we're on a train together, you know, you sit next to each other and watch something on the iPad and just let it stream to both, or on your phone. So you can kind of do, like, the, you know, companionship of listening to the same thing together, which is cool.
Yeah, makes sense to me.
Yeah, and it does kind of tie in as well to the whole, like, power sharing feature of the iPhone 11 as well. Like, you have your AirPods on the back, and then they're also enabled for, you know, talking between people as well.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be cool if they do it in a software update. I probably expect it'll be some, even if they theory they could add it to it, might be a new, it might, they might just make it a new hardware feature anyway. And of course, Bluetooth does support, like, connecting to, you know, the Apple Watch and AirPods at the same time, but that's because they run over the different bands or the different classes of the Bluetooth spec. Bluetooth Duo Audio is specifically about having two audio devices outputting simultaneously, and this could even extend to Bluetooth speakers, whereas right now the only way to do, like, multiple speaker output is to use AirPlay 2. You know, AirPlay 2 is fine and great, but obviously a lot of people do have Bluetooth speakers still, so if you could do it to that as well, that'd be cool. And I think the example that Makatakura used in their post was about having the phone connected to a Bluetooth earphones, like AirPods, as well as the car speaker. So you could, if you're on navigation, you could theoretically have someone listen to music in their ears and then also have the navigation come out of the car.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't actually know if that's legal or not, because I feel like a lot of countries you're not allowed to have earphones in when you're driving, but I guess you could give it to the passenger. I don't know.
It's certainly not encouraged.
Yeah. I assume if this is real, it would be just one of the, you know, the nice little bullet points alongside, like, power share, you can do sound share, you know, they just have a load of features like that.
Yeah, it's a very us feature in terms of, like, here's hardware that does a little bit more. You'll appreciate it whenever you upgrade to a future iPhone, but if it's not this iPhone, like, it's not an upgrade reason, I don't think. Also, it kind of stinks to, like, have to get an upgrade feature be something that you could do, like, an analog way before, but now it's, like, more complicated and digital. It's one more thing to add to the list of iPhone 11 expectations, at least.
And this is a bit left field. We had new hardware this week. We had the MacBook Pros the week before, and this week we actually got a new iPod Touch in what is one of the most depressingly minor updates Apple has done in a while.
Yeah. When you see the headline, it's like the fastest processors ever in the iPod Touch.
iPod Touch has now even greater performance. It's like, well,
yeah,
we know where this story goes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same iPod Touch that was in 2015, which is basically the same iPod Touch that was out in 2012. So you got your 7-year running design here. Still has the non-Touch ID home button. It still has the 4-inch screen. It still has the big bezels. The light. It doesn't have any. In fact, it basically has no changes whatsoever, apart from the processor has moved from an A8 to an A10.
All right.
Fantastic. Obviously, right now, when the iPhones are on A12, they gave A11s to the iPads that just came out, like the iPad mini and stuff. The iPod Touch gets the A10, which is the iPhone 7 processor, the same one that came in the iPhone 7. You know, the iPhone 7 processor is not terrible in, you know, by modern standards. It's okay, but it is old, and it will get, you know, lapped by the newer Apple chips, on especially on like graphics benchmarks. So the graphics improvements have been a lot in those couple of years. And the iPod Touch is, you know, in a big way marketed as a gaming console. And in the press release, they were big on saying that this iPod Touch will support Apple Arcade in the fall, and you can subscribe to that and, you know, play the games on it. But to counterbalance that, it has, you know, an aging processor, not and GPU, and it still has a 4-inch screen, which is not great for games, for instance. So it's kind of like, you know, we kind of just kept it around, and the price didn't change. And they added a 256GB storage option, but they didn't actually bring in the prices of the other models down. They just added $100 on the end, so now you can get a $399 iPod Touch, which is kind of insane, which is 256GB. As we've talked about on the show before, the 2015 iPod Touch with the AA was not powerful enough to have features like ARKit or Group FaceTime. So now the iPod Touch customers, if you go out and buy the new model, you can actually participate in Group FaceTime for the first time. This directly affects my sister, who uses an iPod Touch a lot, but she has the 2015 model. But it's, you know, it's like, does she really want to go and spend, you know, at least another $200 just to be able to do the Group FaceTime stuff with the newer processor? It's a hard sell. I was hoping for at least one more thing that was different to it, right? Like, it's been a while. I feel like they could have, you know, thrown a bone in another area. And it's not like change for change's sake. Yes, it's going to be a budget device, but if they want to market as a budget device, then they could also reduce the price. Like, you can't tell me in the 4 years since then that, okay, back in 2015, the iPhone 7 chip, you know, would have been more expensive at the time, so they put the A8 in or whatever. But between 2015 and 2019, obviously, I think the price of the A8 and the price of the A10 will be the same as what they were before. So there's no price increase in terms of components there, and they haven't changed anything else. And, you know, all those components become cheaper over time. So they're just essentially squeezing a bigger profit margin out of all of these models. Like, I wouldn't have minded if they'd taken it to like $149 and just said we gave it a processor bump and be done with that, or if they'd have kept it on $199, and even if they'd added like Touch ID, or maybe, you know, up the cameras, for instance. Like, I feel like just doing the processor is a bit stingy.
Yeah, no. And the Group FaceTime thing was like the one thing that we hit on for sure about like what's lacking in this. The ARKit thing, it's so weird because, I mean, I don't know that that's a massive feature that like kids care about. And there are some cool scenarios like ARKit has seen so far. But it's very curious, like why those two things are the only things they think they should market and make different enough. Like, even the colors are the same, which is in some ways a good thing, because the colors on the iPod Touch I like more than like on the iPhone XR. But it's like the least they could do, and it was kind of what I envisioned. Like, if they would have taken away the headphone jack or made something worse about it, like, remember there was the one iPod Touch that had no camera, then that would be even worse. So they didn't do those things. And it's earlier than we might have thought. Like, we may have thought it could come in after WWDC, like the one in 2015, but it didn't. It came the week before. But it's certainly not like an impulse purchase. And I know in my family, like, we've been watching this space for an update. And I didn't like order one online. I'm thinking this will be the kind of thing that you just walk into a store and buy, because there's not going to be like massive demand for it. And I think they'll always be available, right? Like,
they're always around. Like, you know, for mainstream customers, it kind of doesn't matter anymore. Like, you know, there are some families where it still makes sense to buy for like children and stuff. But I tend to think, you know, you should save your money up and buy like the 329 iPad, for instance, or even last generation 329 iPad, which would now be like 250. Like, for a lot of, you know, kids and stuff, those are just better choices. I mean, predominantly because the screen's bigger, it's like a nicer experience, and you know, and you do get Touch ID. It's like Apple's all about the security stuff, but the iPod Touch customers, they aren't allowed biometrics of any kind. It's like, okay. The implication here is interesting for like thinking about iOS 13 device compatibility, because historically, like, for instance, on iOS 11 and 12, Apple has only ever supported the most recent generation of iPod Touch. And that's partly because the generations have multiple years between them. You know, it's like 2012, 2015. But it's also just, I think they have less obligation to support those, you know, to support that device.
Mm-hmm.
The old iPod Touch was A8. This is A10. And it's also a 4-inch screen. And obviously this iPod Touch is going to support iOS 13. You can probably guess that because they brought this out now, that the 6th generation, the 2015 model, is not going to get it. I think that's going to go on the cutting room floor. And it's just going to be this generation. I don't think that necessarily means, though, that, you know, all devices older than A8 or that year are gone. The iPod Touch has always been treated differently to the phones. Like, the phones are, you know, many more years of support, typically. It does mean, though, that iOS 13 will still be supporting 4-inch screen sizes. Obviously, this is a 4-inch iPod Touch. And I think that is good news if you're an iPhone SE, you know, fan or owner.
Mm-hmm.
There was maybe some speculation for a while that they might use the iOS 13 as a breakpoint to say, all the 4-inch phones are going out the window. We're going to go 4.7-inch and up now. But they just released this 4-inch Touch. Again, you know, if it's aimed at games, it could have a bigger screen. But no, they didn't do that either. So yeah, 4-inch phones are going to stay around in the lineup. Now we have the Touch, which will last for a few more years. I think that the deprecation might mean that the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus series could get the chop. Although, again, maybe they stay around. But definitely 4-inch phones are still on the table for iOS 13. And I think from our conversation, it's pretty clear that neither of us are going to rush out and buy one of these Touches. So now we move on to the fun stuff. There has been a lot of leaks this week, courtesy of Guillermo Rambo from 925 Mac, obviously, with some screenshots of iOS 13 and macOS 10.15, which are pretty interesting. There's a picture of dark mode. There's a kind of picture of the home screen, although the home screen's got some caveats because it, you know, doesn't look very different in this screenshot. The dock is like colored dark because it's in dark mode. From what we can see, none of the app icons have changed in this image, but I wouldn't put too much like stead in that. These are, you know, early builds, and as we've seen before, the icons can often change later down the road. Even in future seeds past the public release, that it, with iOS 11, they had, you know, they revamped the App Store app. They had a new App Store icon in iOS 11.0 Beta 1, and then by Beta 3, we got the breadsticks icon. So,
right.
So they then and they've done that with other icons as well. So it's not like I'm still hoping for the white icons to get sorted out, but maybe there'll be some tweaks to some icons down the road or even next week. This screenshot specifically is trying to show that, for the most part, the iPhone home screen is not changing. It's still going to have the same structure of pages. The widget's going to be on a separate screen, not interconnected with the icons. The icons still stack top to bottom. And there was a lot of pushback on social media when, you know, we published this. Like, oh, I can't believe it. Where's this home screen redesign? This is ridiculous. Apple's boring. They're doing the same thing again and again. I don't know where people have got this, like, impression from that the iPhone home screen was going to be radically different. Like, all the reports that have come out, you know, since the iOS 12 timeframe have always been focused on, like, there's going to be a home screen redesign focused on the iPad. And, you know, focus on the iPad does give a bit of wiggle room for, you know, maybe some iPhone changes. And maybe there is something that just isn't pictured here, but it's not going to be anything dramatic. Like, I think some people had their hopes set on, like, the app icons, you know, no longer being in a grid, for instance. And you could, like, arrange them wherever you want, not top to bottom stack. But I think that's kind of stupid. I like the iPhone home screen. We've talked about before that, you know, whereas the iPad feels ridiculous with the massive gaps between the icons and, you know, just static pages, the phone still kind of feels within that it's kind of fitting within its clothes and its capabilities are, you know, decently serviced by the current home screen. The widget situation where the widget's like off on their own and they have to load when you swipe over is kind of annoying. But, you know, in general, if you're just, you know, popping in through and out the app and the applications, the iPhone home screen's, you know, perfectly serviceable and not in like the dire situation the iPad is. And we're pretty confident that they're going to address the iPad in a big way, but we just don't have iPad home screen screenshots.
Yeah, maybe the iPhone XS Max and that whole size, you know, would you include the XR? Would make sense for that to have a bigger home screen change? It's like even just one row of icons, or like something about making it more dense. Like that was my complaint about the bigger screen size, was that there just wasn't enough to justify it.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely, like, you look at it, the icons are the same, the wallpaper is the same. That's a big part of it. Like, if you change the wallpaper, it makes the whole home screen look different. And this was like the iOS 12 wallpaper, and so there'll be a new marketing wallpaper for 13. But also, you know, the iPad home screen reveal will be a true reveal unless it leaks between now and, you know, Monday. But that's been kind of in the and all of our headspace in the last few weeks, you know, last few months even, is that the iPad will change. The iPhone is not expected to change this year, you know, if anytime soon. So that's what this reflects as well.
Yeah. And also, I think you could say from this that even if you are in dark mode, they're not going to do anything where they have like an entirely separate home app icon set of dark icons, right? Because they're all still the same light, bright icons. It's the only difference that we can see that's affecting dark mode is the dock has a different vibrancy effect applied to the background. And it does look like a nice vibrant set, but it is obviously minor in the scheme of things.
Yeah, it'll change the way folders look, because folders have that like white theme.
Yeah, they use
to
that
them.
Same kind of material, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and in a way, I'd kind of prefer, even if they just had the darker material, even if you're in light mode, because I feel like the translucent blur that they use on the home screen a lot of the time, if you have like most wallpaper, it just kind of makes the background like a kind of murky gray color. You know, it's not like super appealing.
So right.
I kind of like the dark finish here, but it's probably going to mean that you have to have your whole system in dark mode, which I'm still not entirely sold on. There is a screenshot in here that's interesting of an application being rendered in dark mode. Again, we only see obviously one tab of the music app here. It's the radio tab, which isn't the most interesting tab in the music app, but obviously it is dark. Instead of the music app's normally red and white, with dark mode enabled here, obviously it's a black background. It's a true black background with kind of, you know, white text. And they use the same dark translucency blur materials on like the tab bar and the now playing widget at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a fundamental redesign. It's, you know, a theme color change on the current situation. There is scope for maybe some, you know, bigger changes in different tabs or in different apps. On the music app, at least on the radio tab, it is, you know, the formula we've come to expect. But it is obviously an actual dark mode. It's not an inversion of colors, because if you invert colors on the iPhone today, the music app becomes green because the red turns to green. That obviously isn't what happened here. They still keep the pink tint color. But there are, for instance, the buttons aren't, you know, different style. They're not all rounded rectangles in the music app still. It's the same kind of layout as what we've come and known, but now it's in black.
Yeah.
And I think it looks decent. Like, I'm not opposed to it. It's just not, like, dramatic, okay? The screenshot that really gets me excited is the third one in the row, which is a screenshot of the screenshotting tool. So when you take a screenshot on the iPhone, it comes up in the little thumbnail in the corner, and then you tap it and it fills the screen, and you get markup annotation tools at the bottom, and you get like the share button in the corner and the done button, you know, to dismiss. This looks completely different from the iOS 11 interpretation, was where it first was introduced, and it didn't change in 12. The iOS 11, iOS 12 version uses like line drawings of all the tools. So you have like the rubber and the pen and the marker, the highlighter. They're black and white outlines essentially of the tools, and then you tap them and they raise up. In this instance now, they've all turned to like kind of semi-realistic. They're like 3D, right? But they're not like heavily textured. They're still quite white and muted, but you know, you do have splashes of color on each one. And I think it looks really nice. Like, one of the funniest things about the iOS 11, iOS 12 design is that the eraser, or the rubber, as British people call it, icon on the phone, because it just looks like a pencil, they've had to, like, draw an X on it, because it's only black and white, to actually show you, yeah, this is a thing that actually takes stuff away.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny. Whereas in this one, obviously, they have colors now. So, you know, welcome to 2019, we can use colors again. So it's actually got that kind of pinkish color that you know, come to associate with a rubber.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? You think it looks nice?
Yeah, I think this looks. I mean, one of the things about this is that this style got people very excited. But the markup UI, like, you don't see it in your face all the time, and so it's a splash of like realism in a place that you might not see very often. It would be reflected very well, like if there was a new app that was, you know, like I imagine you'll see this in Notes.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, if Apple had like a dedicated like art app, you know, iPad only, Apple Pencil based, would be fine. But like this level of detail in that would be really cool, because we saw this sort of realism applied to the iPhoto for iOS app years ago before it was discontinued. And that was just kind of a treat, and it hasn't lived on anywhere else. And so Apple's taking that approach here. But it's in a part of the system UI, you know, where you screenshot and you can mark up an image. But it's not like the new home screen or a redesigned music app. It's kind of an interface within an interface. So it's not in your face. And I think people really liked the style. But it's not like a high level, you know, part of this system that you see often.
Yeah. Like if this kind of design philosophy is applied elsewhere, it will be a big deal, right?
Yes. But yes.
Just on this screen, for nerds like us, it's cool. But again, yeah. We've kind of seen this repetition since even like iOS 9, where Apple's diverged from the iOS 7, you know, only have blue links on and just text only. And they've started adding like random rectangle buttons and big bold headers. And all of this kind of new stuff that kind of looks pretty good in the apps where they apply it, but they never go and, you know, redo all the apps in the style. And as we've seen with the music app not changing so much, at least in that, you know, one snapshot we've got, I feel like this is going to be more of that, where it's like the areas where they have gone and, you know, done stuff that's new, they've spruced it up with this again. You know, move, in my opinion, a big move in the step in the right direction from, you know, like stale outlines and stuff to this more, you know, vibrant, interactive and just kind of more fun interface, right? Like it's not, mm-hmm. you know, it's not skeuomorphic. You don't have like linen there for no reason. You just have, you know, and you're in an app which is about drawing colors, and so it kind of makes sense that all the tools can be rendered in color, right? Like,
yeah,
and again, they're not like fully realistic. They're kind of, they're almost like Johnny Ive interpretations of like the perfect white, you know, pen row of pens.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look really closely, the share icon, which has moved from the bottom left to the top right, is now rounded. So I'm very happy about that they actually have not like clinically square box with a, you know, straight arrow lines coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
My guess as to why this screen has changed so much is I am going to, not predict, but I think that if we're going on the philosophy that, oh, they're redesigning stuff that they actually have new features for, as we saw with like the wallet app in iOS 12.2, for instance, I think this kind of markup interface will be like become like a developer API, so that other apps can integrate like drawing tools, and so you might have a third-party app that will be able to bring up an interface like this, and you'll see the same set of colors there, as well as being in like Notes and stuff like that, and the screenshot.
That'd be cool.
It'll become like a third-party interface element essentially, which would be nice. And if you scroll down in Rambo's article, you can see the markup interface applied to the iPad as well. There's the iPad version there, and the iPad one is in this kind of like white red rectangle which you can drag around the screen. It's got that little like pill, you know, the kind of looks like a home indicator but half as wide, which is like the iOS metaphor for you can drag this. So
right.
On the markup UI on the iPad, you'll be able to like have these tools in this kind of oval design and you can drag them around. Interesting, on this screen as well, they have even more of the buttons, like the undo and forward and the plus and the dot dot dot, you know, like more button. They're all kind of like enclosed in circles. You have like the glyph on a circle of background, and this appears to be sort of like where they're going in terms of UI design as well, you know. I mean, shocking stuff here, putting backgrounds on buttons, but again, mm-hmm. I think it looks nice. Maybe the white's slightly too bright because it kind of doesn't contrast great with the white tools, but it's cool, and I can't wait to see it like in full context, because the iPad version is just cropped down to the, you know, like the control panel.
Yeah, that style reminds me of when you first paired the new Apple Pencil, and mm-hmm. has like the floating, you know, over the screen.
Yeah.
But you only see it when you first pair, or if like you check your battery status, it sort of has that style, but it's not a big part of the system, and so this makes that a little bit more promoted. And it's like, you know, if it's designed after that point, then we're going to use that style. It makes sense.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see how this, you know, actually plays out on the real thing. If you, again, Rambo continues with an actual screenshot of the Reminders app that obviously Mark Gurman first reported was going to be redesigned, featuring four tiles for today, scheduled, all of them flagged. And here we have an iPad screenshot showing a very different Reminders app, which uses like white and grays, and then is like accented in blue and red and yellow. Like all those icons for today scheduled all and flagged are in these nice like vibrant circles again, you know, kind of following on the theme of what we saw before. I think it looks nice. Obviously, the screenshot has no content in it, so you can't see what like an actual reminder looks like now. Like, are they going to be kind of a list with just like rounded corners at the end, or if it would be more like the Apple Watch where each row is like individual platters, like that kind of design language, we can't really tell here. It'd be interesting to see where they go. It's probably just going to be more like a straight list. But, you know, this is a dramatic redesign of the Reminders app. From what we can see, I think it's going to be... I see like some, you know, iPad fanatic like kind of type being like, oh, Reminders needs projects, it needs due dates, it needs, you know, all these kind of like get tasks, you know, get stuff done, all this kind of like rich complexity of like to-do apps on the App Store offer. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the direction they're taking here, right? Like, they're repackaging the functionality of the Reminders app that exists today, maybe with some additional tweaks and stuff, but to make it more simple, more easier, and to move away from the kind of metaphor of a stack of cards, which is, you know, kind of what the iOS 7 design is. I mean, that's, it still has that paper texture on every list, right? And that's clearly gone here. To something that's more modern and, you know, in the new design style, and they're using like a rounded font, which is the same font that you see in the wallet app again. It's like San Francisco rounded, which is slightly different to the San Francisco compact rounded using the watch, but same kind of thing. And it looks cool and friendly and inviting. So if this is the design direction going forward, I'd be pretty happy. But equally, if you look to the left-hand side of the screenshot, you see the calendar app, and the calendar app hasn't changed at all. So
right, yeah. And my first glance at this whole screenshot was I didn't initially pick up on that it was a split-screen app, and so I saw like the calendar over there on the side, and then like the second column with the new buttons and everything, and like the right column was like the most of it. And I was like, oh, this is like a whole new, you know, like task management app, and not just like a reminder app, it's like way more robust. They're integrating your calendar over there, and like a whole column. And then you know, quickly realize, oh, that's the calendar app, and it looks the same. So
yeah, and a little bit again, different. This is where it's repeating history of, you know, the Maps app, the Home app. They just look different every year. Apple keeps redesigning apps in slightly different ways. So then when you, especially on the iPad, where you can literally have apps side by side, it's like really jarring. Like none of the buttons on the calendar app are enclosed in circles or have, you know, cute colors. It's all red and white. And then you look to the right and it's like completely different. So, you know, in the ideal world, every app would be in the same design language. But I know that's unrealistic. And I think that kind of rush to change everything is part of the reason we got into this mess in the first place in the iOS 7, you know, 10-month overhaul. That they redid everything, but they you know, they redid everything quickly. So, you know, I'm happy for them to go slow. And I am. And what I like is when they do redesign something, if that looks good, at least I know they're on the right direction. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So they're going in the right way. This looks cool. I think it will be still very intuitive, and you still have your own lists because of there's two sections, but they're offering like filters straight up for, you know, obviously today and scheduling and flagging and stuff. So I think it's going to be a really nice interpretation of reminders on the iPad. You can kind of see where the iPhone version comes into this. They're just going to have, you know, the sidebar will be the front screen, and then you tap through and it slides over and it shows you that, you know, that list. And presumably this kind of design is also coming to the Mac with macOS 10.15, because we've heard there's going to do new Reminders app. I don't think we know for sure yet if it's going to be Marzipan or not, but even if it's not Marzipan, they're going to bring, you know, these kind of the same functionality across their operating systems for consistency. Finally here, there's a picture of the app, which is the unification of Find My iPhone and Find My Friends. The icon looks cool. It's like a, it draws heavily on like the Find My iPhone kind of green radar, but, you know, more refined, and it's not just like gray on white. There's some texture and some depth there. It's more playful. Yeah, it is more playful. I think the icon looks nice. On the screenshot, the app icon label names it Find My. Not so keen on that name. I'm kind of hoping it's a placeholder name and they're going to go something better. Just like Find would be better to me. Find My is, you know, awkward to say and to write and even just to look at.
Find My. Yeah, I mean, and they clearly took the icon from the Find My iPhone app, and I imagine that the interface itself is a similar style. Find My Friends gets rolled into it, and so it's the app that loses out. And so they could have just called it like Find My iPhone and like had all the functionality in there. To say Find My is it would have to grow on me for a while for that to work, but it's weird. Find is just way more intuitive.
Yeah.
But surely it's a placeholder. Especially, you know, this isn't the unveiling, it's a leak version of it. But it at least gives us more, evidence of the rumors that the two apps get combined and there's these new features inside. Maybe
down the road they're going to do the kind of like tile-like hardware tag thing, which
allows you to
find my anything, which is obviously why the iPhone's getting taken out the name, but find my is just stupid.
Find my, yeah.
if they call it Find My, you have to like find me in the lake because I jumped into it or something. That's a stupid name.
Mm-hmm.
But the icon is nice, so that's a good thing. Rambo also had a screenshots of on macOS 10.15 now, pictures of the new music and TV app. So music is the app that's usurping iTunes. We believe it's still going to have a lot of iTunes functionality, and you can kind of see the heritage even in the screenshot here. Like in the playlist it still has like Genius and stuff, so and Apple Music and Library are kind of separated out, and that's kind of how the current iTunes app works. And it's like kind of obvious on the current iTunes where they just kind of added stuff to fit in, and you know, like a jigsaw, just keep adding it to the same thing that already existed. So I'm not sure if this new music app is like truly written from the ground up, or if it is more like the current iTunes app we know today, just stripped down a bit. And you know, that could be fine. Like the iTunes app's not terrible at the moment; it's just got, you know, a load of bloat all over it. The UI here looks pretty nice. They've got in the sidebar now they have like pretty icons with like a gradient that carries through from the first icon to the last one, going from like a light red, like a purple shade on the music app, and similarly for TV, it's the green colors like going into blue. Obviously, on the Mac in general, most sidebar icons are gray, like grayscale at the moment. So maybe this might be a return to some, you know, color and quote unquote fun as well in the Mac UI.
Yeah, there were times when iTunes itself, which was always like a separate app update from the OS, would have like a new style of icons, like, you know, the first to go gray, the first like to have color from gray. And I don't think it was ever like an indication of like the design to come. It was just like whoever's designing iTunes that year. But hopefully, like if this is part of a suite of apps, you know, almost like iLifestyle, then it will be an indication of like the design that we'll see across the other apps too.
Yeah, about a month ago, Rambo sent a screenshot. I don't think he actually published this. It's just private, of the Books app for Mac. And that sidebar did not have colorful icons. It was like more muted and kind of gray. And it had like the same icons you can see in iOS 12 Books. And it looked nice, but it didn't look the same as this. So again, this might just be... I almost think that the TV app and the music app are kind of built on the same foundation and code base, and they just kind of share it across platforms, and that's how you have like the For You and browse tabs on the iPhone app, continue over to the iPad, continue over to the Apple TV with that UI, and now also coming to the Mac as well. They definitely have a lot of code sharing going on there, so this might be the template for, you know, music, TV, and maybe the podcast app that we also believe is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so these technically aren't Marzipan apps, but you know, a non-Marzipan app can still be bad and vice versa. So you don't want to brand it with a brush prematurely. I'm for the most part really like how these look. Again, obviously for, you know, protecting the source and stuff, we had to blank out a lot of the interface. So you basically just see the sidebar. The only thing that I do think is a bit weird is the back button is kind of like in the most random places. Like I don't really like the App Store app on macOS Mojave is like this as well. Like the back icons are always in like weird spots, and I don't know. On the iPhone and the iPad, the little back arrow button is always in like a really nicely positioned. You kind of know where to go. Like even on the between music and TV here, on music, the back button's in like the sidebar because the right hand side has the like play pause controls for the actual music. Whereas on TV, the back button is right next to the zoom button. So you know, there's a bit of a mishmash there. But overall, I'm excited, and it's definitely not, you know, like the train wreck of just taking the iPad music app and putting it on the Mac. So
yeah, certainly
we can turn that one off for good. And obviously we'll see these in person next week.
Indeed.
Because we've had so many leaks and the quantity and like veracity from, you know, Rambo, from Mark Gurman, from various places have been so much. I don't want to spend the rest of this show just doing like, you know, wish list kind of stuff, because I feel like we've seen so many features, but I want to do like a overview of what we're expecting and maybe, you know, our last minute opinions on what we'd like to see in the particular places. So let's start with Apple's favorite operating system, tvOS.
It's the easiest to get through, right?
Okay, in terms of the rumor mill, we have literally crickets. Not really a surprise, given that in previous years, there's basically been nothing at this as well. Like, even for real, generally, Apple has, apart from obviously when they announced the big Apple TV 4 update, and that's when they introduced tvOS, but that was in the fall, not WWDC. They have basically done, you know, effectively nothing to tvOS in the scheme of things. Obviously, they kind of used the WWDC stage to announce new partnerships. Like, 1 year they did the Amazon deal, like the fact that Amazon Prime Video is coming to Apple TV. They announced that on the WWDC stage. They have announced like partnerships like Cricket and the French. You remember that French one last year where they said they were going to do cable streaming over? I can't remember the name of it now.
Yeah.
They even had like the remote app redesign 1 year. Do you remember when the Apple TV 4 didn't work with the old remote app and you had to wait till WWDC to get the new remote? That was a fiasco in itself. They did stuff like single sign-on. Last year, we obviously had the aerial screensavers and the HomeKit remote integration, which we basically still haven't seen come to fruition at all on HomeKit remotes.
Right. I've checked in a few times with the companies listed and everyone says, stay tuned. We'll let you know. Thanks for the interest.
And it doesn't seem like there's going to be much again for tvOS at WWDC this year. Gurman tweeted a couple of weeks ago that the big thing for tvOS this year was the new TV app, which is obviously shipped. And seemingly Apple doesn't put more resources into the tvOS stuff, so there isn't anything coming down the pipe, which is, you know, kind of a shame, because I feel like there's a lot of scope there for, you know, multiple users, picture-in-picture support, stuff like that. Like, you know, obvious things, but it doesn't seem like anything's on the cards to date. So, again, Tim Cook will come on the stage and be like, we've got these four great platforms.
And then let's talk about three of them.
Yeah, and then they'll probably do a recap of Apple TV Plus, maybe announce a couple of few TV channels, and that'll be about it. I don't think you've got any other ideas on the tvOS side?
It just feels like when it first launched, like it was in like this, you know, like time capsule shape where it needed to have some features caught up with like the old Apple TV even and iOS, and that we were like, oh, where's Photos app and, you know, iCloud Photo Stream and all that stuff. And like
they added folders.
Yeah, folders, and they added those and like, pretty quick pace, and then they seem to just think like we're finished with the tvOS itself, and even the App Store is kind of the same, like the navigation with the e-multitask and everything is just like the iOS 8 era, and they seem to think it's just finished, and that the TV app is the new, is like almost the new interface for using the Apple TV, and like if you see everything else is kind of legacy,
yeah,
which is, you know, such a shift from like the future of TV as apps. And you know, you start with the App Store, find some apps, you know, change your Apple TV up a lot. And, you know, so we haven't gotten that. But like you, I imagine that we'll see in this section, you know, is tvOS, is the new TV app. We just shipped it later this fall. We've got Apple TV Plus working on that. And that gives you something to look forward to if you care about Apple TV.
Yeah, it would definitely be a nice surprise if there are, you know, actual tangible features for the operating system. So, maybe, but unlikely.
Yeah, if you had like one of those cloud slides, you know, where it's got like tvOS and then like all the things we didn't have time to talk about, you wouldn't have anything there.
You would just say tvOS in the middle.
Yeah.
They should, on the iOS cloud slide, they should just put tvOS as one of the labels in the corner.
We're going to change the version number of tvOS for 13.
Here's some new screensavers. This time we're going to the ocean. Where we're pretty sure there's going to be a lot of stuff is on iOS. There are so many features rumored and discussed. Obviously, one of the big ones that's drawn so much attention between, you know, probably from 5 years ago, dark mode, the chants of dark mode from, you know, the rabid 9-to-5 Mac readership and the wider community have just been constant. We are definitely getting a dark mode. This year, we obviously saw the music screenshot, which kind of confirms that, you know, they seem to be going for the true black style. Maybe not like, because there, you know, there are different ways of doing dark modes. You can have, you could just grayscale the UI, you know, really boring and lazily. You can do like the true black approach where you make the background black and then you layer stuff over the top of it. Or you can do stuff where it's like very dark grays and blues and, you know, kind of like the Tweetbot dark mode stuff with the like the ocean themes and things. At least based on the music app, it seems like they're going true black. I am happy with the approach, but I am worried about the whole OLED smearing, like, jiggly effect garbage. There are, like, different ways of combating that. A lot of them include using, like, really, really dark grays instead of actually true black. Because of the, you know, the sourcing of the leaked screenshot, we can't be 100% sure what shade it is because of compression and stuff like that, but it seems like it is just normal black. So if it turns that every single app now starts jiggling around on my iPhone 10 screen, I probably won't be using dark mode for very long at all. Because especially on like the, I think the activity app, you know, the Apple Watch activity app on the iPhone looks fantastic. It just, you know, great design than it was, how it has been. Obviously, it's a dark theme, but, you know, if you scroll on like, the workouts tab, I see the jelly effect like on the table headers. I see it like everywhere. So I hope that when they, you know, have this vision for the dark mode thing and they're evangelizing to developers in the sessions and stuff, that there is obviously considerations for that, because otherwise it'll be, you know, a bit of a mess. And I think even if you don't know about like the technical side of the OLED problems, I feel like normal customers would like look at that and feel like their phone's broken. Like it is subtle, but if it's present across every single app when you turn on this feature, I think it's, you know, a big enough problem that they should consider it, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. One thing that will be nice is if you use dark mode on your Mac, being able to switch to iOS and have kind of the same experience, because right now you can't do that so much. So you can do dark mode by apps. But then, you know, if you spend a lot of time in Safari, then that's one of the main apps that just kind of, you just can't match the same, you can't match the look the same way. So it'll be nice to be able to finally have the same experience. You know, like on the Mac, I love the way that music, or well, iTunes so far, and photos look, but then on iOS, you just can't reproduce that, you know, yet. So it'll be nice to see the same consistency there.
Yeah, and I do think there will be more variety in UI on iOS compared to the Mac, because the Mac has, you know, is very much in the realm of everyone uses the same kind of like gray, you know, aqua components from AppKit, all the same controls and stuff, whereas iOS is very heavy on like doing custom branding for this stuff. So, you know, like Facebook is blue, like the, you know, a lot of the interface is just blue. And so I think when dark mode stuff comes around, there will be obviously guidance on the kind of colors and stuff you use, but there will be more freedom compared to the Mac, where if you do stuff that is like outside the system color scheme, it looks wrong, whereas on iOS that's more encouraged. And that will also kind of preclude, in my opinion at least, like the accent color feature stuff. Like on the Mac, as well as choosing between light mode and dark mode, you can also pick between like pink accent color, yellow, red, blue, all of that stuff. And that kind of changes the button colors and the active states for like so many controls and things like that. I don't expect that to come to the iOS in any form, like the accent colors, just because of the visual design of the apps on iOS are so much connected to the color scheme that you couldn't just tell every app, now everything you render must be in red, because it just wouldn't work. Like,
yeah, I mean, even within Apple's own apps, like they shift the color, the accent color between apps, mm-hmm. even with only having, you know, light mode or like a different theme for each app. But like, you know, the pinkish red in music and purple in podcast, and you know, it would lose that sense of place in each app if you overrode that.
Yeah, exactly. And it'd be really inconsistent in like, well, if music is red but my accent color is blue, do they just change the buttons that you click onto blue and you still have the rest of the icon in red? You'd have a lot more clashing colors, whereas on the Mac they can come from this basis of everything, you know, all of the chrome around it, we know what the colors are going to be, so they can, you know, just put the accent colors on top. Whereas iOS doesn't really have, you know, accent colors. The colors are the app. Like, it's not just the, you know, the little decoration on the side.
Right.
From the rumors, we know that you'll be able to toggle between light and dark mode from Control Center. There'll be a button in Control Center between light and dark. I really hope there will be... That's at least better than it just being in the settings, which is what, obviously, the Mac does. You have to go and set some preferences and do it there. I'm still hoping for, like, a scheduling feature, like, either based on time of day, sunset, or just screen brightness. So when your screen brightness is really low, it automatically switches to the dark theme, because then I feel like I'd actually use it versus, you know, manually toggling it. I don't know if I'd be on board.
Yeah, it's like third-party apps to figure that part out. And so has the Apple TV, of all things. So hopefully the Mac figures that out and iOS, you know, figures it out from the get-go.
Yeah. In terms of other, like, just general design changes, I think wherever they have added new features, or there will be design changes like what we see in Reminders or the screenshotting UI, you know, more vibrancy, more colors, lots of buttons in circles, that kind of thing. But it's not going to be a thing where they apply it to every single app at once. It will be in places where stuff has changed and they need to add new features. That's when they go and spruce up the design. We've heard about some other minor stuff, like finally it seems like they're going to address the volume HUD thing. And obviously right now that comes up with the big black overlay in the center, which is blurred out and you can't just see what's behind it. I think they're going to go, at least on the notch phones, they're going to put it in the status bar and just replace the time temporarily with a, you know, the volume icon and thing. It's nice and subtle and you can still see what the volume is, and obviously it fades away and it doesn't obstruct the video. And German said there's going to be like refreshed widgets view, but the widgets are still being on that first, you know, in like page zero. They're not spreading around, at least on the phone. But like the separators between the titles of the widget and the content are going to go away, so it should be a bit cleaner, look more bubbly, you know, a bit more fresh.
Yeah, one of the things about widgets is like if you program that screen, you know, organize it yourself, then you kind of know what app each one is, so you don't necessarily need to have the name of the app attached to the widget.
Yeah, it's a bit redundant.
Taking up an entire row, you can make it much more dense if you, you know, assume, okay, well, you put the widgets here, unless you just have like the stock widget layout. So then you know what the app is. And in many cases, like you can just look at it and tell anyway, even if it's there by default. So just based on the content. So that makes sense to me.
Yeah, Marcus had also mentioned in passing, like there's going to be a few new animations for multitasking and stuff like that. So it'd be fun to see, you know, where they've, you know, tweaked that and changed it up. I do think this hasn't been rumored, interestingly. There's been no reports to this, but I feel like Apple's going to get a lot of criticism if they don't have some kind of features addressing the like call spam problems, you know, like where you just get calls, robot call centers calling you all day long on your phone. Android has done quite a lot of stuff to mitigate this problem. You can have call screening where the call will ring, but you can just send it to like a robot and the robot will transcribe the text, sort of like voicemail transcription. Obviously exists in iOS, but this is for a live phone call, so you can see on the screen the text of what the person's saying, and you can obviously see for yourself if you actually want to pick up and talk to them, in addition to, you know, better spam call detection in the first place. I feel like Apple's got to have some option for that kind of stuff in the system, like better, easier call blocking. Because right now you can install like a third-party extension, like a third-party app that will have call blocking stuff in it. I feel like Apple should probably offer, you know, a baseline of those. So similar to how they have junk spam filtering for iMessage. Probably need to do that for phone calls as well, because it seems like it's becoming an ever bigger problem from an ever bigger number of people. And if stuff does get through the automatic filters, surely they've got to have some way of making it less obstructive and annoying. Whether that's through like a call screening feature, or if they do just do, you know, redesign of the alert for incoming phone calls. Because that's, to me, that annoys me more than the volume HUD stuff. Because the volume HUD is like, you change the volume, you know it's going to show, and you know it's going to go away after 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Whereas the incoming phone call, you can be in the middle of something, and out of the blue, you know, the whole screen gets taken over by, you know, the full screen, accept, deny, here's your phone now, here's the person that's calling you.
Mm-hmm.
I would like that to be... At least as an option, you can choose a more discreet notification, like a banner, right? Maybe the banner just has the green and the red buttons on it, and it just comes down from the top, and you can swipe it away, you can press the buttons. And those options can be just in the settings, and like you can maybe even default still to the current one, which just takes over the whole screen. But if you want to, you can go for something that's just more like a banner style, because that really annoys me, the phone call stuff.
Yeah, and it felt like an age-old request, too. Mm. And instead of doing that banner style alert as an option, they instead made Call Kit, where not just the phone app and FaceTime, but any kind of VoIP app can take advantage of that alert style, which is nice that they integrate with the phone app and contacts, and they're like first-class, you know, message calling apps. But if they take advantage of that, then they also lose the better alert style, which is the banner, which is not, that doesn't interrupt what you're doing. You know, if you're playing a game, watching a movie, or like even like taking a video, it can be really, it can make you stop what you're doing. And my least favorite call is from, like I think at the carrier level, they'll detect that it's a fraud call. And so, you know, like the contact name becomes like fraud alert. It's like, why does it ring? Why don't you just let it like go to voicemail or something? But...
Yeah. Just put it in like in the phone app. You could just have in the missed calls, and it could say, you know, call automatically dropped or call automatically rejected for this reason.
Yeah, it's like deliver quietly alerts that are only on notification center,
exactly.
And not like.
And if you notice it, and you're like, oh, I actually want to talk to them, you can call them back or whatever.
Yeah, and I know it's the iPhone, but like, there's also still this like. Assumption that phone calls are the way to go, and to me, messaging is like where conversations began, and if it needs to elevate to a phone call, it can, or if it's like a different kind of communication, but it's just not nearly as common. Like I use messaging 98% of the time, and then like a phone call is like a different, you know, beast.
Yeah, and the other thing that really annoys me, as well as the phone call alerts, is just like the low battery alerts. They're not, I don't know why they can't be banners, like. The ones that take over the screen is like a central alert with an OK button, and it's just low battery 5% or low battery 10%. It's like,
yeah, I haven't seen that on my phone in a long time.
Yeah, I know you've got the battery case. Yeah.
Love that thing.
Yeah, that's the benefit is that you don't see these stupid alerts. But it's like, okay, just drop a notification down from the top of the screen, please, or maybe just like shake the battery in the status bar, and like, you know, so I've clearly seen it. I don't need to press OK to the fact that I've got low battery. You know, it's that kind of stuff that, especially when iOS 13 has been in development for, you know, a longer period of time than the previous year, hopefully there'd be bandwidth for whatever team's responsible for those kind of alerts, you know, can go and, you know, spruce some of that stuff up. There, again, on that's like the stuff that's going to apply to both iPhone and iPad. Obviously, we're expecting a lot of iPad-specific stuff this time around. Maybe even more than like the iOS 9 and iOS 11 years did. There's going to be like some kind of panel system, which I think is going to be really cool, where you can, you know, if you've got like the popovers, you can drag them around. Obviously, we talked about that before. I'm hoping that the panels will be able to escape the boundary of the apps. If you're in split view, you can show a panel from an app on the left and drag it and just leave it docked to the right. Like it's not physically constrained by the rectangle of the application, because technically, you know, a third-party developer today could make detachable panels, but the only limitation would be they'd have to stay in the rectangle. So if it's going to become a system feature, I want to see Apple go, you know, the extra mile by letting them pop out and act more like a pip, you know, more like a picture-in-picture window where they can like fling them around the actual whole screen, not, you know, in the window of the app. Mm-hmm. We've also heard a lot of discussion about different ways to describe multiple apps of the multiple like windows of the same app on screen at once on multiple documents. We've heard descriptions where it's like you'll be able to cycle through multiple instances of the same app, or it'd be like tabs or something like that. I don't know exactly where they're going to go with this, but I really, really like the Safari implementation of side-by-side tabs. And so if they can bring that as like a system feature, I'll be very, very happy. And as it's not just you can have two tabs side by side, you can have like two groups of tabs side by side, because obviously you have the tab list along the top. When you drag a tab out and, you know, attach to the right on Safari or on iPad Pro today, you get side by side, but then you can, you know, add a new tab to the right hand side of the view, or you can drag tabs across, you can bring them back, like, and it's very fluid and dynamic, and it's going
and it's very flexible.
Mm-hmm. And if it becomes OS level, maybe you could do that kind of flexibility, but as well as having, like, the tabs could theoretically be from different apps, right? You could have a Pages tab and then a Notes tab, and you could fling them around. Or maybe if it's just constrained to the same app, you're at least getting, like, system standard interactions and behaviors rather than, you know, leaving it up to the wild, wild west of different implementations, most of which won't be as good as the Safari implementation, which is very good. Like Ulysses, last week, they're a, you know, a writing app. They did an update for the iPad screen where they do a side-by-side document view where you can see documents at once, but it doesn't let you, you know, open three documents in tabs and move them around. Like when it becomes a system API, it naturally means that Apple can, you know, one time only spend all the engineering effort on getting everything working, and then every single app works in the same way with the same kind of, you know, physics and gestures and interactions, and you can get that vocabulary built up and that kind of muscle memory. So I'm really looking forward to that stuff, you know, becoming like system frameworks, at least, even if you can't, you know, mix and match different apps together necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
I do wonder on like the multitasking interface today, you know, like the grid of images, if you're going to have multiple instances of the same app, is it going to be constrained to one tile for one app still, or will you even be, even will you go really more towards the desktop metaphor of having, you know, more than one tile representing messages, for instance? I kind of feel like they're probably not going to do that because it just becomes complicated, because then even if you're like swiping through things, it's like, if I close messages on this window, does it close the app or does it close the window? How do I reconcile these back together? Who knows? I think they still want to take advantage of this is, you know, an iPad experience. And I think you'll probably still, if you go into multitasking, only have one card per app because it just simplifies the metaphor a lot.
Yeah, it's already kind of fiddly right now, and the more advanced you make it, the more fiddly it gets. So I can see your point there.
Yeah, and detachable panels are a place where they can add a lot of functionality, but a common user could never find it and never even, you know, be affected by it in any way, because you just open the popover like normal and dismiss it like normal, but you can kind of opt into a lot of, you know, not necessarily complexity, but more sophisticated functionality. Whereas yep. multitasking, you know, that's kind of an essential part of the system. So they're probably going to want to be more conservative in, you know, how it works, because otherwise it, you know, spirals out of control. Which is, I think, some of the missteps of like the iOS 11 multitasking implementation. And I really hope that as part of, you know, the iPad focus here, that the problems of the iOS 11 multitasking kind of get addressed in 13. The biggest issue for me still is the work, like if you're in an app and you want to put another app next to it in a side-by-side split view, it's incredibly difficult to do it if the app is not in your dock. You mm-hmm. have to, you know, do like Spider-Man hands, multi-finger gestures, like close the app down, drag one from the home screen, open the other app back up again, slide it all around, and if you let go, then your home screen icons get rearranged and it all, you know, falls apart. So I want some way to like launch an app without going back to the home screen. So I've got two apps side by side, and if I can like swipe from the right and, you know, have an app list there or just recent apps. And again, they kind of had a UI like this with the iOS 9 version, you know, that had different problems, but it did address the issue of how do you launch the second app, because it just had a big long list of apps and you could just tap one and it would open up. So
yeah.
I'm looking forward to some clarity or refinement of that thing, because I've been complaining about it since the iOS 11 betas.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the same problems with that, right? Like, you don't think it's perfect today.
Yeah, it's one of the things that makes me just more comfortable on the Mac, even without the limitations on the Mac.
Yeah. One other stupid thing I've known about this for a while, but it kind of just dawned on me how stupid it was at the weekend, is, so Slideover is the, not side-by-side app, but it's the one that floats over the top. And, mm-hmm. you know, you just drag it out and it sits there. And on iOS 11, they let you they've always let you drag the Slideover app around, and then iOS 11 you can move it to the left or the right because it kind of became like a separate thing. In the iOS 9 version, it would just be like a panel that slid out from the side and always slid back. On the iOS 11, it's more like a floating window. Now you can drag it to the left hand side of the screen after you've made it appear, but you can't dismiss it from the left hand side of the screen, which feels stupid. You have to take it all the way back over to the right side of the screen to make it go away. And then if you're trying to launch a Slideover app for the first time, if you get you drag the app icon, right? You've got the app icon under your finger. You bring it all the way over to the left side of the screen and let go. every single time you do that, it doesn't matter where you place it, it will always open it in the same position on the right side of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if I'm opening it on the left, I want it to stay on the left. Like, I don't understand how this has become a bigger issue, especially if you're like left-handed. I feel like it'd be way more annoying if you drag it over there and it pops up over there. But that's how it works in iOS 11 and iOS 12. Hopefully, you know, as part of the... Maybe we won't even have Slider anymore. It'll be something completely different. But in whatever, you know, incarnation that is resolved, those kind of, like, you know, stupid stuff should just not be there anymore. In terms of the home screen, obviously, the iPhone home screen is not getting any massive changes, but we do believe there is going to be, you know, something significant happening to the iPad home screen. We don't know what's going to change. Obviously, today, there's just a grid of icons with massive gaps in between. What would you like to see them put on the home screen that isn't there? Or what would you like the home screen to, you know, relay out?
I mean, I think there's two paths you can take. You can like fundamentally rethink what the home screen does, which might change how the dock works too. Or you can address the home screen as it is today, but then fix some of the obvious things that you just haven't touched over the years, like the fact that there is a set number of apps that you see on each page, regardless of like how big your iPad screen is, and it just means like there's just like bigger gaps in between the apps, and it just feels like silly. And the same constraints apply like to folders. Like a folder can only be so big regardless of like how big your iPad screen is. And so, you know, you could say like, I want this folder to have like all these apps in it that fill up the whole screen. Just be one type of way and not like, you know, four swipes as well. So I mean, at minimum, like address the problems that have been there for a while. But I kind of think like if they were going to do that, they would have just done that like over the years, and they've got something bigger in mind. And that's one of the things where I want them to kind of surprise me and be like, you know, this is not a direct correlation of what the Mac does, where there's like files on the desktop and then your dock is like, you know, a launcher and running apps. And maybe it's just like they mix in app icons and widgets, and that's how you fill in some of that space. But it definitely feels like that there's something that I'm not thinking about that would make more sense. It's not borrowed from the Mac. It's not just, you know, mixing the widget screen and the app launcher together. But I'm not sure what it is. And, you know, like ultimately I'd love to just, it's the classic, like run Mac OS on the iPad screen. And then you don't kind of don't have the problem anymore. but that's a very different thing than what we'll, you know, expect to see.
Yeah. I would like it if there was some kind of ability to expand an app icon so it kind of becomes like a widget, if that makes sense. Like, if you had the calculator, it's a bad example because there isn't a calculator up on the iPad. But if there was, you could like pinch on the calculator and it would pop out into like an iPhone-sized calculator on the home screen. And it would just sit there. And you could launch it and use it from the home screen. And if you wanted to, you know, if you were getting really down and dirty with some receipts, you could open the calculator to a normal app and it would like zoom up. So you'd almost get like iPhone sized widgets, which are essentially the full app just in the iPhone experience on the home screen. And you could have maybe, because I still think they're probably still going to have a grid of icons, but I think they're going to like split the screen in half and then use the other half of the screen for something. So maybe on the right hand side of the screen, you can pick like four apps that are always there and actually interactable and you can do stuff with. Because the widgets are nice, but you know, the widgets kind of suck. Like, you want the actual apps. So if you could pick your own, you know, four apps that can always be there. The iPads are more than powerful enough to drive it, and you could see them, and you can interact, and then you could pull them up and make them, you know, actually launched if you really wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think that'd be cool. And it could be something even where, again, kind of talking on the progressive disclosure stuff, by default, you know, you maybe have zero pinned apps on the home screen, but you'd have the ability to pin one, you know, if you're more on the power user. Because there is definitely a thing where, as we've seen the iPhone home screen not changing fundamentally, they don't want to, like, give up all of that, like, goodwill and learning and knowledge on the customer base. Or, like, the iPad home screen is so different, it's unrecognizable. Like, I still think you're going to see an iPhone home screen layout on the new iPad home screen, and then there'll be other stuff incorporated around it, which will therefore make it less stupid, and the gaps between the icons will be normal size and stuff. They'll fill the space with other things. That's my
one way to One way to solve the problem of changing the home screen so much that it's not recognizable is make the Tips app one of the pinned app by default, and then it teaches everyone how to remove it, and everyone who doesn't remove it learns from it by default. It's like it teaches you.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying here, I don't expect them to change it to like a honeycomb grid like the watch. Like,
yeah.
I don't think it's going to be like, it's still going to be app icons in a grid, maybe with other more dynamic indirect stuff around it, whether that's apps or whether it's widgets or whether it's files, like that kind of direction. Obviously, I feel like one place where 13 is definitely going to address features is with just like file management. They received so much flack when the 2018 iPad Pros came out, and especially on like the thumb drive thing, like you can't plug in a thumb drive to the USB port and it doesn't do anything. I presume they're going to have some accommodations for that. Probably it launches the Files app and you can drag files wherever you want. That's probably what's going to happen. And also, I think they're going to have like a proper first-party solution to the kind of Lightroom problem, where if you want to import photos but not import to the Photos app, you don't have a good solution right now. In fact, at the time, Apple told iPad Pro reviewers that the solution back in like November was to get a shortcut from Adobe that would copy the files across into the Lightroom sandbox, and then you can interact from there. Obviously, that's, you know, rubbish that an old customer and user shouldn't have to deal with. I think there will probably be some support for that, where like photo importing, maybe if you plug in the camera, it comes up and says, you know, which app do you want to import these photos into? Or maybe you can set a default and it uses that one. Like, I think there's going to be some consideration for those flows, pulling in for thumb drives, plugging in cameras, that kind of thing. And hopefully that will also lead to like a bigger redesign of the Files app as it is, maybe making it more Mac-like with like a three-column layout and tags and different views and stuff like that. I think that'd be cool. Oh, and in Safari, there's going to be a download manager probably, and that'll probably appear as a files like provider in the Files app. So as well as all these other sources, you can get your files from Safari. I think that's just kind of like logical.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen it, right? And it's kind of been, you know, half rumored, but that kind of stuff kind of feels like a lock. HomeKit was cool for iOS. There was obviously that cool report from Mark Gurman where he said they're going to add camera recording capability. I think that would be a big deal. If they can deliver like the ability to save a video feed and going back look to it later at no additional charge, apart from that the video uses up your iCloud space, so indirectly you can, you know, you can be used as an iCloud upsell to buy more iCloud storage. That's like a fantastic feature, because all the you know, other like smart home security camera stuff, they all want to sell you subscriptions. You know, Apple wants to sell subscriptions. Every company wants to sell you subscriptions. So all of these like smart home camera systems, they all have their own like subscription offerings, and you know, you don't want to pay for that. It's just stupid. If you can just make better use of your iCloud storage, I would be all over that, and it would make a big difference. Obviously, the big hold up there is there aren't that many like HomeKit cameras and stuff on the market, but it's growing, and especially with like doorbells, that's where they need to, you know, round out the portfolio of actual hardware.
Yeah, that would get an applause if they made news there at WWDC over that.
Yeah, and you can see how it benefits Apple in, you know, encouraging people to get the $999 tier of iCloud, for instance.
Yeah, I'm managing my expectations and thinking maybe this is just like if there's video history to be seen, that, you know, it can be exposed in the home app, but that maybe like it's got to be unlocked within the manufacturer's app, you know, through a subscription. But if it's anything more than that, I'll be excited.
Yeah. And finally, I think for the iOS section, they're going to make a big deal this year out of iMessage again. Obviously, in iOS 10, that's when they had the big iMessage update with the App Store and the effects and all that stuff. I think they're going to have another big section on iMessage this year, covering things like the ability to set your own avatar, which then shows to everybody, have your own like profile and display name that changes. We saw that report about the an emoji like stickers stuff and like preset an emojis pre-made. Maybe one of the options for your avatar is an emoji rendered, right? So you can pick from your photo library if you want, or you can actually pick a rendered emoji. And maybe that emoji is even a 3D animated one that just sits and bobs around. That'd be kind of cool. Plus, obviously, we're going to have the screen time features that let you control based on contacts. So you can limit who like your child talks to at 7 p.m. versus at 10 p.m. And I bet they like wrap all that stuff into like an iMessage focus, as well as the stuff with the share sheet redesign, where they're gonna again, you know, recommend friends and stuff. So I would expect there's gonna be a pretty big iMessage kind of like section of the keynote, because people love iMessage and it's a huge, you know, it's a huge deal for Apple.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, you know, the big highlights of iOS. Obviously, there's so many stuff featured in rumor. It's kind of pointless to go through everything, but that is like the like five key areas of the iOS section, at least in what I think is going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now we move over to like watchOS, and obviously Apple loves to show off the new watch faces during the keynote. If there are some, they're like great stage material and demo material. We've heard there's going to be a lot of watch faces this year coming, at least according to the Bloomberg report. There's a like gradient face, extra large, California dial, that's the one with the Roman numerals and the numbers kind of split up, solar analog and infograph subdial. I'm really looking forward to seeing what these faces look like. I would still prefer it if they actually did like third-party watch faces in a bigger way, even if it wasn't like, you know, a free-for-all watch face store. If it was just like, we're now partnering with 50 select partners to make, you know, 50 new watch faces. Because I feel like Apple's addition of 3 or 4 every year is just not going to be good enough. Especially as they seem to kind of forget about some of the old faces when they introduce new ones. So, whereas if each individual watch face was, like, controlled by a company, it'd be more like, you know, an app model where you get, like, continuous updates.
Yeah, one of the weird things with faces right now is, like, you can't have every face on one watch, because like there are some that are only on Nike watches and some that are only on the Hermes watches and some that are only on cellular watches. And you know, the last part I kind of get, but the Nike thing is like, if you like the Hermes face and the Nike face, you've got to have both watches to have access to both faces. And it could be that like if you've ever had one of each watch face, like it gets attached to your Apple ID account, and that would be a step forward. But I happen to like the steel watches, but I also like the Nike face, the older one more so than the new one. They didn't change it for the Series 4 design, but the older where it was just like it was a digital face and it had like the Nike font for like the time.
Mm-hmm.
I found that face to be like it fit my style, and I can't have it on a steel watch. And so if it could be that, you know, if you've ever had it before, or, you know, put it in a face store, that's the best case scenario. But that's an oddity that still exists.
Yeah, and it seems like for this year, as well as the watch faces, there's also a big focus on just apps for the, like, Apple apps for the watch. We've heard about voice memos coming across, Apple Books for audiobooks, calculator, a new app called Doses, which is kind of apparently going to be a kind of like pill tracker, so it gives you reminders about medication. And Cycles is the internal name for what is some sort of like menstrual cycle tracking application. You know, all great additions. Plus, they're going to add an App Store app, so you can actually download apps from the watch itself. And we kind of talked about this a couple of weeks ago when this was fresh. I highly doubt it will be a full-featured App Store available on the watch face.
Right.
It's going to be like, you know, featured curation of, you know, the 10 apps of the 10 watch apps of the week, and you can go and, you know, download those to your heart's content while you're on the go or whatever. There's a question about how they do this technically, because obviously right now all watch apps come bundled through an iPhone app. But if you actually think about it, since watchOS 2 or 3, they let watch apps be independent and disconnected from the phone to just actually function. And if you have an app that doesn't need features or hardware features of the phone, it can just talk to the internet directly, especially on obviously a cellular watch. Like Daily Dictionary, my watch app, you don't have to be anywhere near the phone for it to work. It will just talk to the server on its own to get the information for the words of the day and stuff. So the app is like already independent. It just, when you first install it, it comes with the iPhone app, right? That's just how it comes down. I think there's a obvious model where if you download on the watch, it just downloads the watch component to the watch, and it downloads the iPhone, and it like queues up the iPhone download on the phone, you know, wherever the phone is. That's like the obvious approach. Maybe they do something more drastic, and they actually have like a new way of making watch apps, which are truly, you know, a big step, which would then allow them to also just have watch apps on their own and you wouldn't download the iPhone version. We've talked about how WatchKit sucks to death, but so I would love it if they have something more major in the works, but I'm not like convinced that's what it's going to be. When I see App Store app, I don't think it's like the harbinger of something major necessarily. It could just be you get the app on the watch and then the iPhone version downloads, you know.
Because it feels like that, if it was bigger than that, it would be rumored.
Yeah, like if they it seems like for the watch, like UI frames and stuff, they're waiting for other projects to come to fruition. Like there's this like Amber project rumored, which is like some kind of Swift UI framework. It sounds like that is their solution for, you know, making richer Apple Watch apps as well as the other platforms. But it doesn't seem like that's on the cards for this year, unfortunately. Maybe it is, and it's going to be a nice surprise. And that would be really major, especially from, you know, the developer side of view. But at least from, you know, kind of feeling the air, it doesn't seem like that's happening at the moment, which is annoying. But, you know, that's the Apple Watch for you. Out of, like, the rumored apps, which is, like, the one you want the most?
Audiobooks, easily. I mean, Yeah.
I think voice memos is good, but obviously you can get the third party. There are some good third party options already available. Calculator is just like a funny one. I still think it's dumb they don't have notes app on the watch. Like, even if you can't write a note, just let you read it. But there you go. That is the mystery of WatchOS for you there. Interestingly, we haven't heard anything more really about like workout orientated features for WatchOS. But generally, that's how they structure the WatchOS segment of WWDC. They normally have like some communication features. They do watch faces, and they have like the workout activity stuff.
Yeah.
And in previous years, they've had like the activity challenges. They've added new workout types, that kind of stuff. We haven't had any rumors about what they're going to do there. So we couldn't like say anything concrete. But I do believe that they're not going to give up on the watch as a fitness device. So there probably will be new, you know, like activity stuff. And obviously you've complained about like just the fact that activity challenges have limits on how many friends you can have and on activity sharing. The competitions that they introduced last year could probably be better and more varied in what they do. And then they'll probably add new workout types. We saw there was one leak from the WWDC app that in the description that they're going to add like beat by beat data source for third party apps to take advantage of the heart rate sensor in like real time, which would be cool. Oh, and we've heard about the kind of hearing health thing, which is going to be like across all the platforms, and that will include like on the watch as well. So if you're listening to music on the watch and the music goes too loud, you get a warning, and you can even do like complications, and you can get like progress on making sure you're not going deaf, which is interesting. Is there anything specific that from like a workout fitness angle that you're like begging for on watch at the moment?
And the big thing for me for a long time has been, you know, improvements around running, around tracking, and, you know, the ability to see, like, if this is your fastest 5K that you've ever ran.
Oh,
and,
yeah,
and,
like records. Yeah,
and historical records. And even something as simple as, like, if you finish a run and you want to see the breakdown, like, of what your run was, your pace for each mile, you can see it on the iPhone after the run in the activity app, but it's not part of the, it's part of the workout summary, but like once you dismiss it, it's gone until you get back to the iPhone. And I feel like there's like if the Apple Watch was like only a fitness watch and like it didn't rely on the iPhone, that wouldn't be the case. Like it would fit as much information there as it could collect. And like, it's still got the information in memory because it's got to send it back to the iPhone. Like if you're not near the iPhone, mm-hmm. It just isn't present it to you. So that's something that I've wanted for a while. It's like for, if it can fit on the Apple Watch activity on the activity after the iPhone, then let it be accessible also on the Apple Watch itself, because, you know, there's lots of situations where you would want that and you wouldn't have the iPhone with you, and you've got to wait until you get back to the iPhone to have that.
Yeah. I'm kind of hoping that they expand on the automatic workout notifications that they introduced last year. So obviously right now you get a notification when it detects that you've started a workout, and you have to accept it manually, and then you can stop working out and it will send you a notification a few minutes later saying, do you want to stop it? But, you know, in an ideal world of, you know, the modern technology, this stuff should be smart enough that you shouldn't have to just tell it could just do it for you. And Fitbit and stuff do have pretty good features like where they automatically record, you know, your activity across the day. So I'm kind of hoping that like last year they were seeing how well the data worked, and then maybe this year they actually have some stuff which is you don't have to actually commit to anything. It can just passively track you. Because obviously they track stuff like the move ring and the exercise ring and the stand ring. But I feel like there's opportunities for the move ring to be more fine-grained. And you were doing 30 minutes of running in, you know, across these 300 calories or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it doesn't, again, it wouldn't automatically detect every single workout type on its own. But I think for basic things like running, it probably should be smart enough to just do it without you having to like double check with the owner of the watch.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm really excited to see. We love WatchOS, obviously. Really excited to see what they do there, and especially on that fitness category stuff. There's definitely gonna be new features in that regard because they just always do it. It's just interesting that we haven't heard of anything to date.
Right.
macOS, obviously the big thing is going to be, you know, UIKit on the Mac, UIKit apps on the Mac, Marzipan shipping for real for developers. There's going to be loads of stuff related to that. Obviously transferring across cross-pollination of the iPad iOS 13 features, like multiple windows and panels, and you can see how those things might translate over to obviously Windows and the Mac, and like popovers and those kind of UI elements that will, I think, enhance, you know, the Marzipan apps. But I remain unconvinced that these apps are still going to be as good as native apps, or even close to as good. Like, people kind of dismiss the you know, the Marzipan quartet of Mojave, those apps, as being like first run tries, and they kind of suck, and they definitely do. This year round, I expect that the Marzipan incarnation that ships will be closer to those four apps still than it will be closer to like a true Mac app. And you know, a lot of people are against me on this, and they like say, no, it's going to be perfect. I am not sold on that vision. I just think there are fundamental technical problems where you can't translate iOS interfaces to a Mac in a good way. And it's not the problem isn't UIKit on the Mac, the problem is the code sharing, right? So a developer could write a UI for the Mac purely in UIKit code, and it would be, you know, perfectly native on the Mac and perfectly great and optimized and tuned. The thing that I have the qualms and the reservations about is the whole, oh, you can just make your iPad interface and then we can do some clever stuff in the framework to make it work well on the Mac. I think that is like a fallacy and it's not going to play out properly. They might try and sell it, but I'm not sold on that vision at all. In my head, I am kind of hoping that they approach the Marzipan UIKit apps on the Macs as more of like target the replacement of Electron apps, right? So like they should be targeting like Slack. Like Slack, stop making a web app in a wrapper, make a Marzipan app instead, right? But then they're still going to maintain AppKit for, you know, like, quote-unquote, true Mac apps, professional Mac apps, deeper, richer Mac apps. Like, there's definitely a thing where, obviously, once this exists, the interest in AppKit will go down. But they've maintained two app frameworks, you know, for many, many years. And I think they carry on doing that. And if you can get rid of, you know, the web app junk and have iOS apps, I'd say that's an improvement. And then you can still have the richer apps going on, you know, written in, you know, the you know, the kind of native Mac UI frameworks. And we kind of see this in the leaks, like music and TV are not made with Marzipan, right? So clearly Apple is not going all in on Marzipan this year. And I'm hoping that's kind of their pitch to developers as well. Like, you know, we really want you to do this AppKit stuff, but we understand about resources and stuff. And we obviously want all the iOS developers to come to the Mac, and so you can do this Marzipan stuff and we'll obviously support you and we're going to add new features to it. But I think it will be still be very plainly obvious that this is an iPad app running on the Mac and not feel like, you know, you're in seventh heaven here running a Mac app, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're getting close to seeing.
Yeah. I am excited, and obviously I like having new functionality on the Mac through these apps, and we'll probably see more of Apple's apps come to Marzipan, you know, via the Marzipan route, whether that's podcasts and something else. There's also an interesting, like, middle ground they could take here, which seems to be what they're doing with the Messages app. And so, obviously, it's been rumored that Messages effects, like the bubble effects and the screen effects, like confetti and stuff like that, are coming, and lasers, are coming to Messages on the Mac with macOS 10.15. But it doesn't seem like the Messages app is just the iOS app ported through Marzipan. I think what they're going, and what I'm hoping is what they're going to offer, is like a kind of hybrid approach where you can make your kind of like UI Chrome in AppKit, and then, you know, like the critical sections can just be like a window into the UI Kit world, which is completely code shared with your iOS app. Because for Messages, that's what you want. You want the transcript to be as one-to-one, as identical across every single screen that you look at it on. And so it makes perfect sense that, you know, the bubbles, the effects, the overlays, the stickers, like that whole like actual, that rectangle of the transcript view, that can be shared and be basically the iOS version. And that would be way better than the current Mac Messages, which is actually a web app in a wrapper. Like that transcript view is just like HTML. And that's why it doesn't have like any of the cool physics effects, and it has none of the nice animations and all that stuff. But still, that transcript would be inside the same container of current the AppKit design, with like more Mac sidebars, toolbar buttons, and the like.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where I'm hoping they go there. Are you like excited for Marzipan stuff, or are you kind of, oh, I think this is going to ruin everything?
I mean, it depends. There are even like favorite Mac apps that I like that have not been supported well, you know, as well as their iOS counterparts. And if it's just because of like the success, then if this means that there are better Mac apps, you know, and some of the apps that I know and love like have to change and be different, then it kind of redefines like what a Mac app is. And it's going to be a mixed experience, but it's if there are more options and more variety for what, you know, what tools you can use on the Mac, as long as you don't like just change the Mac in such a way that it's like limited at an OS level, you know, like iOS can be, then I'm not going to be, you know, complaining.
Yeah. I think Apple is being pretty measured here, especially as we see like the replacement for iTunes, the music app, not being a straight port of iPad Music. Like, these people are smart, right? Like, they know what they're doing. So I think as much as everybody sees like, oh, Marzipan and UIKit on the Mac is just going to be de facto the future, I actually think that that's not going to happen, or at least not going to happen soon. And it will take a longer period to mature to the point where that's actually feasible. The breakup of iTunes is going to get a big applause on stage for sure. They're definitely going to push that angle, and that's in many ways enabled by the Marzipan project. Obviously, we've talked about the TV and the music app, you know, in the show in the Rambo section. We believe there is a podcast app too, even if we haven't seen screenshots of that yet. And the Books app, which is going to get revamped to be more in the style of the iOS 12 Books app in terms of, you know, the design and the feature set on offer. So I'm pretty sure there's going to be a nice slide where they say the iTunes is going away, something along those lines. They probably won't say it quite like that, or because they, you know, they don't want to diss their own hardware. And actually, if you look closely on the iOS 13 screenshots, you know, the iTunes Store app is still there, so they're not getting rid of the iTunes Store yet. But I feel like this is definitely a year where, you know, iTunes goes in the utilities folder and they push music and TV and stuff first.
Mm-hmm.
And developers know what that means, and it will definitely get big applause. We're going to get screen time and Siri shortcuts on the Mac. That's kind of self-explanatory. Although maybe the question there is whether there's Siri shortcuts just in terms of like you can do these actions through Siri, or whether you can actually get the shortcuts app on the Mac and, you know, make your own workflows as kind of like an automated replacement.
Right.
And there you have issues where, you know, shortcuts is not as powerful as Automator is in many ways, and Automator is not as simple to use as shortcuts is Siri, so you have that kind of dichotomy. And again, you might even have Automator and shortcuts on the Mac for a while until, you know, one of the two is deprecated. So It'd be interesting if that plays out. Obviously, it's nice to have screen time on the Mac, because I just want to see shared statistics across all my devices, because right now I have pretty reasonable hours used, but I just know that I've been spending so many hours on the Mac as well, and it'll be a kind of like shock when those graphs are actually unified and the number of hours spent today on the computer like doubles, because it now includes Mac as well as iOS.
Right.
The thing I'm really interested to see on the Mac side is the kind of like sidecar project stuff. This includes the like Lunar display kind of external display support from extending the Mac to the iPad. It seems like you're going to be able to project a window of an application onto an iPad screen. Maybe you can interact it through Touchware while it's on that external display. but it's not going to be, it's not just going to one-to-one take your full window and mirror it to the thing. I feel like it's going to be on an app-by-app basis. That stuff's going to be cool to see and play around with. But what I actually just want is like the better window management stuff, which I feel like is like the subcategory of the sidecar feature. And that just means stuff like window snapping, better tiling arrangement. And I just want to be able to quickly size an app to take up 50% of the screen without doing a multitasking split screen, right? You just drag it to the side. It kind of shows you it's going to take up 50%. You let go and it resizes. Or you can take it to the corner. It takes up like a square in the corner, or it makes a skinny column. Like, that stuff is so convenient on Windows. And I barely, I only use Windows to play like two games, but still I find opportunities where I'm just like snapping and stuff around. It's like so much nicer. Like, please just add this to the Mac. It's kind of like semi-rumored. I hope it comes to fruition. And yeah, I expect Sidecar will be on an app window by app window basis only, and it won't be like an actual Lunar Display replacement, even though that's what everyone describes it as, because it's easy to describe it like that.
Sounds good.
Yeah. That's kind of the OS's covered. In terms of hardware, surely this is the Mac Pro time, right?
I mean, we know it's sometime this year, and it could just have its own event, but it's what's going to be on the mind of a lot of people in this room, especially. And they've gotten the MacBook Pro update out of the way, the iPod Touch update out of the way. And so it can be, you know, this is a true sneak peek of something coming later this year, and you know, hopefully we'll have faith in that happens. But surely, even if they don't show the display yet, like, and that's kind of a part of it, is like, well, what do you attach to it? I mean, they're making a display. I mean, probably they showed the whole thing.
Yeah, but stupid if they only showed half of it.
Yeah, but surely this is like where they do the reveal, and then, you know, everyone knows, you know, later this year, you know, whether it's October or December, like this thing goes on sale. It would be kind of wild, like, if you could actually buy it from WWDC, you know, like from the event date. But if not that, you know, then they've at least said this is the year of the Mac Pro. So what better time to show it off than right now?
Yeah, I think this is going to be the one more thing. You know, they might not call it one more thing, but this is going to be the closer.
Yeah.
This is the Pro.
I'll say 3,000 more things, dollars.
You can put your price up there, I think. I think it's probably going to look more like a tower and less like some crazy, you know, Lego brick, stick everything together. It will look like closer to the, like, cheese grater, with pop-out sections, and you can change stuff around, and you can switch out components. I think they've learned their lesson, and that the 2013 Trashcan Mac Pro, whilst beautiful, was just too ambitious for what they're aiming for. I'm sure it will still look really pretty. I don't think it's going to be like, you know, like a science project in terms of something so radically different, and it all connects together through like Thunderbolt ports, and you have all these like random IO like spreading or sprawling over the place.
And I'm sure they've got like the next few updates of this planned out too, so that they don't, you know, find themselves in the same thermal corner
yeah,
again.
Indeed. I think it will be closer to a standard PC tower, you know, with some Apple magic fused in there. I don't think we'll see the 16-inch MacBook Pro at this event, as they wouldn't have refreshed the MacBook Pros last week if it was coming so soon. I still think it could happen later in the year, though. I wouldn't rule it out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any other hardware on the docket. There's nothing.
Yeah, they've kind of cleared the deck in that regard so far.
Yeah. Unless that tile thing for the Find My app.
I can't. Find My Tile.
Yeah, Find My Tile. Unless they actually announce that part of the thing today, then technically that counts as hardware. But that, for me, again, the tile stuff kind of feels like another full thing. And they can just do the app today, unifying friends and an iPhone. I would really like to see a like Siri section of the keynote, maybe headed by John Gianandre, who would be his, you know, first stage appearance. We haven't heard any rumors about Siri getting fundamentally better this year, but surely it's got to be at some point. And I'd really like them to have a section where they just talk about stuff, even if it's just talking about like the HomePod, you know, multiple users maybe, or stuff like that. And I feel like John Gianandre is a good presenter, just by what he used to do at Google, and like he did some interviews and stuff, and he was, you know, very impressive, and so I feel like he'd fit well on the stage.
And yeah, he would lend like kind of intelligent weight to what's happening with Siri, even if there's nothing new to show off today. Just like, this is what we've been working on, kind of thing.
Yeah. Even if it was just a slide where they're like showing, we've been secretly rolling out these improvements over the last year that have improved Siri accuracy from, you know, 60 to 80 in these categories, and we're doing one new category today, for instance, right? Something like that. I feel it would be, you know, a cool segment. And this is his first WWDC as a SVP, obviously, so he actually has like seniority now. Do you think they'll talk about their services again? Obviously, we had the March event with, you know, News Plus, Arcade, TV Plus, Apple Card. Do you think any of that will come up for another showing?
I don't know. I mean, maybe Apple Card, because the launch timing is getting closer now that we're in summer. But they've also had an entire event dedicated to telling us how they'll let us pay them monthly, you know, and annually. So probably, you know, like even when they changed iCloud, right, like the structure for like how much storage you get for what price, you know, they never changed the 5 gigabytes free. But I believe there was an instance of that where like WWDC came and went, but it wasn't until the fall whenever the changes were like revealed.
Yeah. One time they changed the prices in like September, and then I think it was iOS 11. They did the thing where you can do family sharing on the 200 gig and 1 terabyte.
Yeah.
And that, I'm pretty sure that was announced at WWDC.
Yeah. So it depends, but like, I wouldn't, you know, watch the whole keynote and then like rule out an iCloud storage price change this year, because it could happen even if it's not part of the event. And then for all the other services stuff, it feels like they just had the, you know, a whole event 2 months ago dedicated to the services. So
yeah, this isn't the stage where they announce the price of TV Plus or News or Apple Arcade.
That right.
September. Maybe they might mention Apple Arcade, because obviously the developer angle, like, make your games for Apple Arcade, it's going to be great, blah, 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 blah. But in general, it's not the subscription thing, and I don't expect to see News Plus massive redesign in iOS 13. It's too soon. It will be coming, you know, later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's kind of the overview of the big stuff. I want to do, like, close with just, you get to pick three things, and the rules are, these are three things you want to see, and you're not allowed to pick anything that has been leaked. So all of that stuff, if it's been rumored at all by like Mark or Rambo or any of the rest, it's not allowed. It's purely out of your own imagination. You can call it wish casting, you can call it predictions. It's just what you want to have happen. You can be across, you know, all of the platforms. You can choose whatever you want. You get three choices.
I want to knock mine out real quick.
Go for it.
Because you're probably going to get more thought out than mine. But I've got a simple first one, which is... last week I was at the gym, and I had my iPhone and my Apple Watch, and I had a phone call, and I think I was streaming music from the phone, but I answered from the watch, like the phone call that came in, and I hit answer, and I was in the workout app, like that was like the most active app, but then like I think I got confused, and I managed to like juggle the phone call, like I guess hand it off or like pick it up on the watch itself. And then, like, the earbuds I was using, like, moved to the watch. This is the Powerbeats Pro. And what happened was I got stuck in the phone app, and I wanted to, like, make sure my workout was paused or resume the workout while I was on the phone, because I felt like, oh, I was on the elliptical, and I was like, I can keep going at a steady pace if I want to, and I don't want to just, like, stand here. There was no one else in the gym that I was in, so I could have a phone call, and it wasn't, like, rude or anything. But the fact of the matter is, like, it's always been this way, but if you're in the phone app on the Apple Watch, you can't leave it. So that's still the case. And I feel like that's an update where software could address it and doesn't have to be new hardware, because like the hardware has gotten so good lately that it's just that they've just not changed that. And that can be for so many different things. Like if you're in a phone call and you want to reference something in your email, like from the mail app, or like directions, or like, you know, there could be a number of things if there was ever a notes app, and like, you know, but you can't do it yet because you get stuck in the phone app, and like the thing to do would have had to have been like hand it off to the phone or like hang up. And if you're just on the watch itself, like you just get stuck in the phone app, and that's so archaic in terms of like a modal app that you can't leave. So the ability to leave the phone app and multitask on the Apple Watch, like you should probably should have been able to do from like the series, you know, 3 or and on at least.
That's a good choice, actually. That is a frustration for sure.
Yeah. And I think is a little bit more advanced, but it's just kind of a feature request that I've got out there. I've found that if I shuffle through songs from music during a workout, and like I skip songs and skip songs, and like I found one that sticks with me, it's like kind of a power song. I would love to see like the play history of what I listened to on a workout and like where in the workout the song was. And like, you know, you can see your run like visualize, like this was your heart rate, this was your pace, this was your distance on like a chart, and you can zoom in and out of it and look all around it. But to also attach like the ability to like what song was playing then, like which ones did you reject, and like, you know, which ones did you stick it out with, and like, you know, you've got a really good mile pace for this song. You know, you can remember that, but like just seeing it charted like historically would be really cool, I think.
So kind of like listening history compared to.
Yeah, just map, like it's already there, listening history, but just like map it with also the workout that happened. And I feel
so
like,
you know, like the map in the workout app, in the activity app where you can go and see mm-hmm. it. They could like mm-hmm. on that, they could pins on that map of these are the songs that were playing.
Yeah. So that kind of thing. I thought of it a few weeks ago, like before run. I was like, because what I often do is like I'll make a playlist and I'll label it by the date that I ran a certain race. And like in the description, I'll put like this was so and so race, like the name of the title of the race, and I'll usually attach a photo that like is associated with that location or that race or that group or whatever. But I'm kind of like doing it all like manually before the race starts. But if you just like go and like shuffle songs and everything, like just that information, I think would be useful, and it kind of ties in, you know, music and fitness and the watch is like one device in a neat way. And then finally, We're getting dark mode in the music app on the iPhone this year, you know, and that looks awesome. But I still prefer playing music from the Mac because you have transitions between songs, and Spotify does it on iOS with streaming music. I don't know why Apple Music doesn't do it, but it's one thing that needs to be there. And so the ability to put transitions between songs, because it does wonders for what a playlist can be. If the songs don't like pick up and end at the precise time that they would need to like sound good, a transition can kind of muddy that and make it work for you.
Yeah, so it's like a crossfade, right? That's what iTunes does.
Exactly. Yeah. And it just, anytime I listen to music on iTunes, I have it on as like a 6-second crossfade, and it just sounds so much more advanced than like, you know, a cold stop and then a fresh open. And I've even done things like if I'm making a playlist and like the end of the song has the beginning of the next song in it, I'll try and find where that song was like on a soundtrack or like a radio edit if it was a single, because then it's like a special cut version of it that doesn't have that like transition from the album that you're listening to out of the album environment. So that's kind of a workaround in some cases, yeah. but just to have a transition, you know, applies to like everything by default. And that, you know, that's something that's been needed for a while. So that's my third pick.
Yeah. And I should have mentioned this in the iOS section, but I feel like this is a year that we might actually see like tangible features come out of the Shazam acquisition.
True.
Yeah, and you know, the music stuff could be some of that, like real-time lyrics, like lyrics where it highlights what is you know, happening. And also Mark Gurman tweeted last night, like kind of slyly hinting at music handoff coming. So you can listen to the playlist on your phone, then you sit down at your desk and your Mac already has the playlist there, you press play and it carries on from where you left off. Like,
yeah, it's been highly requested for a while, yeah. Too.
And this obviously all ties into the new music app and stuff. So it's definitely something like crossfade transitions would definitely come under that, because it's like, if it's going to sync your playlist, it could do a sync in the settings configured, you know, at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some good choices. I went for, when I was thinking about this, one of the things I realized is, you know, a lot of what I want of iOS 13 is just features that existed before, specifically for the iPad, and then they got rid of them for no good reason.
Yeah.
Like the, you know, widgets on the iPad used to be two columns, and now they're only one column. So presumably they're going to make that better again. But what I actually picked was split keyboard for the iPad Pro. So obviously split keyboard exists for the smaller iPads. It does not work on the 11-inch or on the 12.9-inch, and I have the 12.9-inch iPad Pro. It's never worked there. I wish it would. When Scott Forstall introduced a split keyboard in iOS 5, it was even positioned as like a pro feature. Like, you know, if you do a lot of work on your iPad and you want to hold it like this, you can do this cool, crazy keyboard, and it looks a bit weird, but it's really functional because you just type your thumbs and you don't have to stretch to the middle of the screen. And obviously that was in a time when the iPad was 9.7 inches. Mm-hmm. And when the iPad is now 12.9 inches, the middle of the screen's even further away from your hands. So if you could actually have a split keyboard on the iPad Pro, it'd be very useful. And it's the Pro keyboard feature not available on the Pro iPads. So it's really annoying. And I don't use my iPad with an external keyboard, a physical keyboard of any kind. I always type on it. Usually by like resting my lap and, you know, emulating, you know, the horizontal laptop keyboard just on the screen with the software. But I would love to just hold it up and type with my thumbs like that. And the fact that they haven't done it for so many years is really annoying. But, you know, this is the iPad year. This could be the time. Secondly, I want always-on watch face. We talked about third-party faces, you know, in the watch face section. I don't know. I can't decide if an always-on watch face is more or less likely. Because, again, it feels like something they could do with software, but also maybe it would be a hardware feature.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think it's more likely to happen sooner than the third-party watch faces.
I agree.
Yeah, and I don't know if it is necessarily a software thing or a hardware thing, but I would just want, you know, a very basic version of the watch face always on the screen. And Android Wear watch faces have always done this. And you basically, like on my current watch face now, I have numerals, which is the analog clock hands, and it has a complication in the corner, and it has the number 9, which is kind of like the design of the numerals face. As the hours go by, you know, the digit appears on the screen in the right place. What I imagine for the always on watch face is there'd just be two styles. There'd be a digital style and an analog style, and all you get is either the readout of the numbers in digital, or you get the clock hands, like the hour and the minute. And so when you're in, you know, when you've just got your watch by your side and you're in the always on mode, you just get like the grayscale watch hands. And then you raise your wrist, and then the actual watch face fades into view around it, right? So that's how they save power, because they're only showing white and black on an OLED screen throughout the day.
Yep.
I just want to, you know, glance down and see what the time is, and you raise your wrist, and then all the information and complications and richness fills in around it. Be a great feature, and, you know, I would love it. Again, I feel like it's probably going to be a hardware thing, maybe, but, you know, this is my picks, and it's not, you know, it's not predictions, so there you go, that's what I want. And then finally, TVOS never gets any love. So this is probably the most unlikeliest of them all. But please put multiple users on the Apple TV operating system, especially in light of Apple TV Plus coming in the fall, which is a service I think I actually want. Like, if they're just going to have TVOS be a single user thing, the recommendations and the up next and the suggestions for the TV app are going to be completely screwed, because in the living room TV, everyone uses the TV. People are going to be watching the TV Plus series, the TV Plus shows, maybe simultaneously, but at different points in the show. Like if I'm on episode 1, or and then, you know, someone else in the house is on episode 5, well, when I go into the TV app, it's going to recommend me episode 6, and I want episode 2. And like all of those clashes and collisions would go away if I could just have some kind of profile on the TV. And it feels like something that could be motivated by the fact that TV Plus is coming, you know, a paid-for subscription service by Apple. And obviously Netflix, you know, has multiple users. Everyone has multiple users. Hulu, blah, blah, blah. All these third-party apps do it inside the app. I would like it to be a system-wide thing. So you could have your own home screen. You could have your own photos set up. You could have all sorts of stuff. You could have your own watch next queue and app next queue. I would settle for it just being a feature of the TV app. Like you just pick. It just has a list of your family sharing, you know, names on the side, and you just pick the one you want to go to, and it goes to that, and it goes to that thing. It can be very simple. I want separate watch next queues that then sync across on my devices with recommendations and suggestions. Especially as I believe I actually am going to enjoy TV Plus, but the hold up is, you know, the weaknesses in the TV app, and multiple users on Apple TV is definitely one of the areas where it's like, you know, please just have it there to actually make your service good.
So I agree.
There you go. I hope that we get what we want. But even if we don't, I'm really excited for everything that has been rumored, leaked, reported. I think it's going to be a huge year. It's going to be a big WWC with, you know, maybe with the exception of TVOS, huge new features for iOS, Mac, and the watch. And maybe some surprises as well. Like the Mac Pro is going to be cool to see just what it looks like. I'm never going to buy one, but it'd be nice to like drool it from the internet. I am going to be watching it from home. I think, Zach, you're going to be heading off to San Jose, right?
Yeah, I should be in town.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're around in San Jose, look out for Zach. He will be there. I think he's going to have some stickers to give out, right?
I've ordered backup stickers out of the massive wave of interest I've seen so far, yes.
It's back in the days when Apple did press releases like unrivaled demand for our latest phones, yes. And they actually said numbers. Well,
indeed.
Here we are, the 95 Max stickers are popping off. I can't wait. We'll obviously be back next week with a full podcast breaking down the keynote and everything that happened. I think this is going to easily eclipse the 2018 keynote in terms of, you know, interest and value. Like, it was fine, but I feel like this one's going to just be rocking on all cylinders. I can't wait. We will see you next week. Zach, do you want to play us out?
All right, guys, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. If you enjoy the show, you can always rate us in iTunes or recommend us in Overcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Matt Apollo Zach Benjamin. You're on Twitter at
BZA Mayo.
And also follow 9to5Mac, and we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.